Welcome in to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Roundtable Pod. Joining me tonight, Colin Weatherwax and Randy Haynes. How are we doing tonight, Colin?
Doing great. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. Hit us with your Twitter handle real quick.
I'm at TWeatherwax13 and going up against my arch nemesis, Randy Haynes, tonight.
And we also have Randy Haynes. That's right. How you doing, Randy?
Good, Mike. Thanks for having me on. You can find me on Twitter at RTH222, mainly tweeting back and forth with Colin about Jonathan Scope and Robbie Ray.
Couple lightning rods there. So anything you guys are working on right now you want to direct folks to, Colin?
Yeah, so you can find me and Randy on the Dirt Dogs podcast once a week with Mike the Robocop. And then also I've been a guest on the Coon and Friends podcast, this Roundtable podcast, and also the Push Accept podcast with Ben Brennis and Donnie Miller.
I'm itching to make a fantasy trade. I haven't been able to pull one off yet just so I can get on Push Accept.
Oh, yeah. As soon as you make one, that's the one thing you have to do. You have to initiate.
Yeah. My home league, it's only a 10-team league, so teams are obviously stacked, and I feel like I've got so many trading chips, but nobody wants to trade with you because they have no room on their bench either.
Yeah.
So
that's the problem with 10-team leagues.
We'll see if I can't get something going in, like, TGFBI maybe, so it's got a little profile to it. But for people unfamiliar with the format, we're going to have three rounds. Round one, we're going to talk an early season breakout that the different people on the pod buy. Talk about that for a few minutes, a little back and forth. Then we're going to move on to a toss-up between who do you buy more? I'm sorry, who do you worry about more, Jose Altuve or Joey Votto? And the winner of that will get to have the final word on who they think the most overrated breakout has been to date. But prior to that, let's talk a little bit about some of your well-laid plans coming into this season with your different teams, guys. What's going right for you? What's going wrong for you? You know, all three of us are in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, hosted by Fantrax, developed by Justin Mason. Terrific idea, and I'm sure I'm middle of the pack. How are you guys doing?
I'm actually first in my league, and as of this morning, when the last overall numbers were ran, I believe I was 18th in the overall. So I'm doing pretty well so far. I know Colin's up there pretty good. Where are you at right now, Colin?
I'm pulling up where I'm at right now. So me and Ben Brennis are actually in second place in our league. We're going up against Ray HQ, and he is just dominating. I mean, he has 126 points, and we have 105. And I think the last time I looked, we were, we were right there in the top 20, and we've been there most of the season. So I'm pulling up the rankings now. I don't know if you still have them up, Randy, but we've been in the top 20.
You're
most
tied
of the season.
Tied for 15th as of right now.
Yeah.
When he ran it, when he did the update this morning, you're tied.
This morning, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been there pretty much steady the whole time.
Yeah, I've definitely seen Matt Adams has been putting out, and your name's been popping in there as one of the top teams. So good work by you guys early on. I'm treading water, middle of the league. I think I'm in like seventh place right now in League 9. So definitely not on the big board yet. Waiting on the hitting to stabilize, hopefully. Also waiting on Ronald Acuna to be called up, which is probably, I don't want to call it a mistake. I had no plans to draft Acuna and just got jammed up with, not having somebody I liked at that pick. I got him, I think, around pick 91. And I was hoping to get a pitcher, and pitching was just flying off the board in our league, so I didn't get, a price that I could even stomach. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to take Acuna, and not a panic pick because we're not on a short clock, but for lack of a better word, a panic pick. But the biggest part of that mistake to me, what I did wrong there, was I didn't go get Preston Tucker at the end of the draft, thinking, have yourself covered with that outfielder. You're going to get stats, and when Acuna gets called up, you just switch him. You know, nobody could have probably guessed that Tucker was going to put up the power numbers he is, but a really missed opportunity where it made sense for me to be the person who owned him, and I didn't do that. So I left a lot of value on the table there.
Yeah, and I think that was a surprise whenever, you know, whenever the season started that Preston Tucker was getting more playing time than the high dollar man in Nick Markakis. And I'm sure Randy can tell you all about how great Nick Markakis is.
He was a little better with Baltimore from a fantasy standpoint. He at least would steal a couple of bases here and there, and he would at least hit double digit bombs. Of course, he's hitting for a little more power so far this year. So it's I think if Tucker wasn't off to the start like he is, we would have seen Acuna by now. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they wanted to try to keep him down as long as they possibly can. But he's finally starting to turn it around here in the minors. So I've got Acuna in the league. I'd like to see him up, you know, tomorrow, and it would be wonderful. That's probably in the next couple of weeks, I think, is realistic. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think as soon as he can force their hand, it has to happen. I bought into it too, and once I owned him, of course, I retroactively started stumping for him, and seeing he was going to come out mid-April, I thought, oh, you know, that's great, I'm fine. Not for a second stopping to consider the slightest hiccup gives them a reason to just hold him down.
Yeah, and I think if they weren't off to, you know, such a great start, you know, with the team that they currently have, there's no need for him right now because, like we've been saying, Preston Tucker, Nick Markakis can hold down that rotation in that last outfield spot. But I think the more interesting thing for me looking at the Braves system is all those pitchers. I know Max Fried got bumped up this morning to the Major League Club, and they've just been decimated with the back end of their bullpen. So I think that's probably where they're going to be going sooner rather than later, is more the pitching prospects until, you know, Tucker falls back to earth and Nick Markakis either gets hurt like he always does or doesn't perform. You know, shows his age a little bit. So I think right now they're in a great position. This is probably their best case scenario to keep him down there while they're still winning ball games.
The problem with those Braves pitching prospects is there's so damn many of them. You got Guevara on the DL. They've got Soroka. You know, he's probably the next serious guy long term. But like you said, there's Fried, a handful more. So you know, it's anybody's guess who's pitching well that week when they need the call up.
Hopefully Jose Bautista is not playing third when those guys get called up.
I got Austin Riley in a dynasty league with you, Colin. So seeing Jose Bautista get signed threw a little bit of water on that, at least for this season.
Yeah.
let's jump over to your team, Colin. And you got the TGFBI, and then you also have the main event in the NFBC team. What's going right for you? What's going wrong for you with those guys?
Well, we've talked about it a lot on the Dirt Dogs podcast for my main event team. So a couple of things that are going right is I've drafted Mookie Betts. I got him 9th overall. Nice. So I felt like that was a steal, especially, you know, with how he started off the season. I paired him with J.D. Martinez going around in the second round. Got Brian Dozier at a great value in the third round, I thought. And then the fourth round is when I panicked. So I know you had your panic pick of Acuna, but mine was at the tail end of a starting pitching run, and I did not want to get so far behind the eight ball on all the pitching stat categories. Mm-hmm. So I chose Kenley Jansen. Mm-hmm. So I've been, you know, very nervous, to say the least, at the beginning of the season. I've found myself in the top four. I haven't strayed away from the top four of the standings so far, knock on wood. But my pitching staff's led by Clevinger, Garrett Cole, David Price. I picked up Harlan Garcia. And then my saves, I'm actually in first place somehow. I have Kenley Jansen, Brad Boxberger, Brad Peacock. So I've gotten a few out of Peacock that I didn't think of that I was going to get. And then Andrew Miller got me a couple as well. So overall, I think the one thing that I'm nervous about is getting enough innings and enough strikeouts to stay competitive, because I only have 5 or 6 starting pitchers as of now. But, you know, I have Daniel Murphy on the DL. So once he comes back, I think my offense is just going to be that much better. And so that's the one league that I'm spending most of my time every weekend and all week just trying to figure out what I want to do.
Yeah, that's I like what you did there at the top with the two Red Sox. I guess at the time of drafting it, you couldn't be 100% sure that they were going to be hitting first and fourth. But you knew they would be close together in the order. And that's something that a lot of season-long teams, you know, when drafting, they overlook is you can pair people together. Like, I have Dozier and Sano on a team, and when that offense does well, stuff piles up for me. Going at the top there with the two Red Sox, really nice strategy. And then how about you, Randy? How's your TGFBI team doing?
Yeah, so I'm currently in first in my league, but Rudy Gamble from Razzball is a few points right on my tail. Oh, yeah. And then Scott Pianowski's not far behind him. So it could be right now I'm in first, but I could be down as low as third or fourth if things start to fall out of order. My first six picks, I just wanted to kind of go with best player available and kind of build a good balance. I got Nolan Arenado. I got D. Gordon. Pitching-wise, I was able to end up with Steven Strasburg, Aroldis Chapman. I picked Garrett Cole in the sixth round, which was a good pick. And I also grabbed Jonathan Scope, which is someone that Colin and I have argued about extensively. And, of course, right now, Colin's winning because Scope is on the DL. But I'm not worried just yet. But that is also – Scope is one of the players I need to kind of do – what I was projecting for in the preseason, because I am currently in the top five in every category in my league except for home runs and runs scored. And Scope's obviously a big power guy that I was hoping for. You know, I've got a few other guys that are underperforming in the power department, so I'm not worried about it yet. My Miguel Cabrera pick, yeah, he's batting averages there, but he just doesn't look the same. Unless I looked into him, the exit velocity wasn't there what it was, you know, pre-2017. You know, it's better than it was last year, so I'll take that, but that could end up being a pick I regret. In the outfield, I've gotten Gregory Polanco, who's hitting for more power than I expected, but the batting average is awful. And Corey Dickerson has been a nice grab. Adam Jones is doing what he's doing, so I think I wanted to draft like a really well-balanced team, and I feel like I did that. And then, again, my pitching staff, when I have Strasburg and Cole, that's really helping out a lot. And I was able to hit mid-rounds on Sean Manaya. And in Fab, I was able to grab Keenan Middleton for $0 before he assumed the closer's role with the Angels, so that's helped a lot. And Chris Devensky was somebody I grabbed late, so I picked up a couple of saves from him that I wasn't expecting. And those guys have helped lower the ratios of somebody like Danny Duffy that I probably was too high on to begin with, but I just have a kind of a soft spot for Duffy, and he's had a couple decent starts, but then a couple just brutal starts where he's trying to walk everybody that steps in the batter's box. So long term, I still like the outlook of my team, but I'm gonna need some more power. Luckily, we can trade in this league, so maybe if I end up in a spot where I banked a bunch of saves, because I currently have three closers with jobs with Chapman, Neris, and Middleton, and then whatever you want to call Davinsky. Mm-hmm. So maybe three and a half closers. Maybe I can end up, you know, trading a closer for a little bit more power somewhere. But I like how things are going for me right now.
Yeah, if only you were able to draft like a major league player at your second base position, then you might be towards the top of the standings.
Well, we'll see where things are in a couple of months. Scope's going to turn around when the weather heats up here.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat with you, with Davinsky. You know, getting a couple surprise saves there was really nice early on. Didn't expect that till more, you know, later down the road. And the wheels are turning, and I'm thinking, you know, I should go find the Ken Giles owner and see if he wants to back that up a little bit. But yeah, you got Peacock as well, so.
Yeah, we've talked about this on – Colin and I have talked about this on the other pod. Where do you stand with the Houston bullpen? Because I still think Giles will end up with the most saves on that team, but it's not going to be what his owners were projecting him to have. Where do you kind of stand on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they'll probably take the same approach they have in prior seasons where they give him some time to work it out, ease him back in. They're a pretty forward-thinking team, and the ninth inning is not the most important place for your bullpen to pitch. The critical spots of the game are the most important part, and they've got a couple of the best at that with Davinsky, Peacock. Colin McHugh is starting to settle into that role a little bit. Will Harris, like, their bullpen is really well built. Giles just happens to be the closer and the guy who pitches the ninth, which, like we said, doesn't necessarily, you know, make it the best spot for your best pitcher. So they're comfortable with him there, it seems like, and as long as he doesn't force their hand and make him either be traded or be removed as closer, he'll probably hold that job.
Yeah, and see, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I think that, like you were saying, that bullpen is so stacked that he can find himself in the sixth or seventh inning role and a couple more blowups. And, you know, with the Houston Astros, they're trying to go for a World Series. So I could see him off their roster or traded by the trade deadline.
I could see him trade it. The problem is, what do the Astros need?
Yeah, exactly.
They've got prospects still in the pipeline. They're covered everywhere on the field. They've got Marwin Gonzalez, who plays every position but catcher. Like, you know, yeah. Maybe an outfielder if they could get the right guy, but who's going to pay for Giles, you know, with a solid outfielder?
Yeah, he'll probably just be DFA'd and then, you know, released outright. And that's the worst-case scenario, but that's what I see as a more likely situation than him leading them in saves.
Yeah, I could see him getting traded to the NL if they were going to, you know, decide to pull the plug for just another middling prospect so they get something in return. Just want to wrap up with a note on what's gone well for me. I faded starting pitching in TGFBI, not necessarily by choice. It's a strategy I have employed before, and it works to mixed success, but I actually did fairly well in this league doing that. So far, you know, my ace is Chris Archer. That's obviously a problem. He needs to settle down, but it's still early, and the K's should be there for him. But hit on a couple spots with, like, Rick Porcello off to a really good start. Got him for almost nothing. Davinsky. My closers are Hand, Iglesias, and Kimbrel. So doing really well in that category, and those guys are holding my ratios down. So that's a strategy that I've been happy with so far, that going into the season after the draft I was rather worried about. But let's jump into the round table. So round one, we're talking players that have broken out that you guys think is for real, and they're going to continue to do that rest of season. So we'll start off with you, Colin. You know, tell us who your player is and why you think he's legit.
So my guy is Didi Gregorius, and unfortunately I don't have any shares of him this year, mostly because I didn't buy into his complete turnaround last year. Last year he only walked at a 4.4% clip. I get that he had the 25 home runs and 87 RBIs in 130 games, and he hit 287. So, you know, I wanted to believe, however, I didn't. And then I think what scared me off even more was coming into the season, I felt that the Yankees didn't believe in him because they were batting him fifth or sixth, and having Greg Bird be in their cleanup hitter. So, you know, and of course, he starts off the season, he's red hot, Greg Bird gets hurt like we all should have suspected, and he slides right back into that cleanup role right between Stanton and Judge, which I think that's a perfect spot for him. I mean, you can put anybody that's going to stay healthy, that's getting better, in between those two guys, and I think they'll excel. But since it's Didi playing in that short, with the short porch, I think I heard on a podcast the other day that his average home run distance is 370 feet, which in most ballparks don't get out. That's just a fly out. So, but he's taking advantage of what's given to him, and he's, you know, he hit another home run tonight on Tuesday night. So he's got 8 home runs, over 25 RBIs. He's walking at a 16% clip, only striking out an 8% clip, with over a 300 batting average. And like I said, just in that lineup itself, I expect him to get better and better as the season goes on, and his counting stats are going to be there, and he's a shortstop that's going to provide you with a couple steals as well. So I think if you drafted him, you know, this year, I believe he probably was going in the 10th, 11th, 12th round where I didn't feel comfortable pulling the trigger, but you're reaping all the benefits right now, and as long as he stays healthy and the Yankees keep him in that position, you could have a top 2 to 3 shortstop at the end of the year.
Yeah, for sure. That has been a ton of found value. Depending on your league settings, he's probably a top 10 player. And you brought up the strikeout rate and the walk rate, which is obviously going to regress. You know, he's not going to walk at 16% and strike out at 8% the whole season.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's correct. Yeah, because, you know, coming out of Arizona, he was only at 7%, and his first couple years with the Yankees, he was 3% and 5%. So, of course, that'll regress, but what that shows is that his eye has improved. So even if it regresses to 10% walk rate and his strikeouts go back to what they were last year, around 12%, that's still, you know, way better than his 4.4% that he had last year, and he still had those 25 home runs, 87 RBIs. So with this new lineup, with his improved eye at the plate, you know, even if it does regress, I still think he could provide top 3 shortstop value.
Right, and what I want to point out is if you look at his strikeout rates coming from his last year with the Diamondbacks at 17%, then first year with the Yankees, 2015, 14.7, 2016, 13.7, 2017, 12.3, you're noticing a trend here. So, you know, he's getting better every season in that regard. The walk rate, you know, not quite the same trend, but for me, a breakout happens around 6 weeks. You know, a hot streak is 2 weeks. Around 4 weeks, you're starting to say, maybe I need to buy into this. And at 6 weeks, like, it's there. It's happening. It's going to continue in all likelihood. So we're getting on the verge of that. You know, we're a month in here. I'm buying Didi. Anything to add on Didi, Randy?
I've been a big Didi fan, you know, since he started to break out with the Yankees last year. You know, you like to see, like you brought up, Mike, that, you know, he's not going to continue to walk at that clip and strike out that few, but it's a great spot for him, great park kind of built for his swing, and you can't ask for a better spot to be in that lineup. So, you know, Didi's had a little bit of health issues in the past, but I don't think it's anything that's, you know, chronic that's going to continue to happen. So as long as he's healthy, he should be in a good spot, and he's at least the top 10 shortstop for me going forward, and he could even, if he runs a little more, and I feel like he's running a little bit more so far to start this season. If he's just one of those guys that decides, hey, I want to try for 15 steals just for the heck of it, he could end up as a top five. He could end up as a top 5 shortstop.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, obviously, Didi is a buy as far as buying high on him. I don't know. I don't think you could convince a Didi owner to sell him at a price anywhere commiserate to what they paid. And if you can, then definitely do that deal.
Well, maybe if you have this next guy we're going to talk about, Mike.
All right. Let's jump in with Randy. Who's your buy high?
My guy is Mitch Haniger, outfielder for the Mariners. So far, 8 home runs, 23 RBIs with a .324 batting average. He chipped in a steal. Some of that I liked a little bit going into last year. He always showed pretty good walk rates throughout the minor leagues. He showed a nice power, or showed a nice combo of power and speed, the different stops in the minors. Got off to a good start last year in April before he got hurt. Injuries are something that plagued Haniger off and on throughout the minors. So coming into the season, he was definitely on my radar, but he wasn't someone I was going out and targeting. I ended up with 2 shares, but so far this season, and small sample size, but I've been really impressed with what I'm seeing from him as I've kind of done a deep dive on him. He's hitting the ball a lot harder. He's hitting the ball in the air more, on the ground less, which is what you always like to see. But he's not necessarily pulling the ball a lot more. He's actually pulling the ball just slightly less compared to what he did last year. Again, you know, a couple balls here and there could definitely change that, you know. But he's, you know, making contact on pitches outside of the zone more. So then I went back and looked at that start that he had last year and just thought, maybe he's just a hot starter and somebody that maybe he can't, you know, some guys just, everybody's, you know, banged up in Major League Baseball, but some guys are, you know, like Hanley Ramirez is one that comes to mind. When he's got something wrong with him, his performance suffers big time. So I don't know, maybe Haniger or something like that. And in the spread that he had, or the start that he had last year, was a 3-week stretch, and his hard hit rates and his fly ball rates were not anywhere near what they were now. They were kind of what they were similar to all of 2017. So to me, this looks like a change that he's made. He's also 27, so you got maybe somebody entering his prime, took a little while to hone his craft. He's somebody that from the eye test has a pretty good swing for a right-handed hitter. You know, right-handed hitters don't always get credit for having pretty swings, but Haniger has a nice smooth swing. He's in a good lineup for RBIs. Where he's at in the lineup right now, usually hitting fifth or sixth, it's not going to be so good for runs scored because the bottom of that Mariners order is nothing special at all. But hitting at the kind of the back end of the train after D. Gordon and Cano and Cruz and Seager, that's a really nice spot for him to be in. So I'm buying Haniger again. Health could derail this, but I think there's some real changes that he's made this year. His exit velocity, it looks like it's starting to trend up a little bit. It's nothing too major, at least that from what I was able to see, but it did look like it's at least trending in the right direction. And Haniger is somebody that I would go to buy. And I don't think it would be that expensive to go out and buy Haniger right now, because the Haniger owner that probably was somebody, you know, like me, he was into him a little bit last year, but didn't really happen. You know, he's late on your radar. Maybe he's your fourth or fifth outfielder, and they just ended up falling to him. So they might be looking to unload him. Maybe they don't think the starter is legit. So I think he could be somebody you could easily buy actually right now.
Right. So on Haniger, a couple points. You brought up where he hits in the order. I'd really like to see him move up. I think that can easily happen. Cruz has already had a little bit of a health issue. Cano is older as well. Segura's spent time on the DL. D. Gordon, less injury, more PED issue in the past. And I don't think it would be incredibly hard for him to leapfrog Kyle Seager. It's just the handedness of Kyle Seager.
I think it's a handedness thing, and the fact that Seager's been, I'm sure Seager's probably the longest tenured Mariner. So sometimes in situations where they'll get the little, okay, you've been with us through the tough times kind of thing. So I do. If there was an injury, obviously that would boost his value even more. But I don't. It's going to be tough for him to actually leapfrog somebody in that lineup on a consistent basis. At least for me, I don't see that happening. Which is kind of how they do things out there in Seattle.
Yeah, the only spot I could see him taking would be Segura's. For the two spot, if Segura were an extended slump, but I bought him everywhere. I own him in TGFBI. I did about a dozen best balls over on Fantrax and a couple NFBC cut line leagues, which are best balls. And I think I have him on literally almost every single team. Where I was coming from is, I was paying really close attention to his breakout last year. And the reason being, I think it was Jim Bowden who pointed out that he said in the trade of Segura and Haniger for Taijuan Walker, Segura's a nice piece, but Haniger's the real gravy in this trade. He's the guy who's going to be in that lineup for a long time to come. So I heard that, my ears perked up, and I said, all right, let me pay attention to Haniger.
Yeah.
And, saw what he did when he was healthy last year. So I just went and said, you know what? People are really dinging him for his season-long numbers. He would have easily been a top 100 player. I had him ranked about 130 in my initial draft of rankings, and that was, like, ridiculously high. So I moved him closer to, like, 150, and I was just still the high man on him everywhere I went. So he's one of the guys I've gotten right the most to date. Obviously, like you said, injury has been what's held him back. Baseball is a really tough sport to play every single day of the week. You're even on your off days, you're hitting in the cage, you're doing work. It's 162 games is a ridiculous thing to ask of the human body.
So. Yeah, that's gonna be the big thing with Haniger, I think, is once he does get that, last year I can't remember what his injury was, but I know he missed more than a month, so it wasn't just like a little ding here or ding there that was kind of a cumulative, things adding up. But it's gonna be interesting to see once he does have that first. Tweak of a hamstring, or maybe he hurts a back muscle or something. How he plays through that, is he going to be somebody that know, he's banged up and we don't even notice because the performance, or is he going to be, you know, like a Hanley Ramirez type? That is, once he is, you know, when everything's working great, you know, great offensive player, but as soon as one little thing is off, he's just almost unplayable from a major league standpoint. So hopefully that's not the case with Haniger, but we'll have to see. But you know, I have pretty high hopes for him.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hoping is that he already started off the year with a hand injury in early spring training. So I'm hoping like that's it. He's got it out of the way.
That'd be nice. Yeah. Yeah, he met his quota already.
But yeah, he was not the same player when he came back from the injury last year. I can't remember exactly what it was. I feel like it might have been a fracture of some sort.
It was oblique.
Oblique, that's right. Yeah.
It was an oblique. Yeah. And it looks really like he missed his power. Missed the better part of 6 weeks, and then had another little spell in the beginning of August where he missed the better part of 3 weeks. So.
Anything to add on Haniger, Colin?
Yeah, so unfortunately I wasn't like you guys and was able to draft him. I think I missed the boat because I was a year early. So last year I drafted him everywhere. I was believing the hype. And, of course, he had that oblique injury after he started off the season so great. I'm actually with Randy on this one, and fans of the Dirt Dogs podcast know that doesn't happen very often. So luckily this is being recorded and it is being documented. So last year before the injury, he started off just about the same as he did this year. And, coming into this year, he's fully healthy. I know he had that scare, like you said, Mike, at the beginning of the season, but, you know, in that lineup, I know he's only batting fifth or sixth right now. However, Nelson Cruz has already gotten hurt. You saw him bump up to number four in the slot, and he got more RBI chances, more home runs because of it. And then Gene Segura has always been an injury risk. D. Gordon can find himself sliding all over the base paths and, you know, find himself taking a couple breaks throughout the year. So with that lineup, the top five are pretty much set, and then Seager kind of just fits in wherever he goes, but he can find himself in the two spot where he batted last year. He can find himself batting cleanup like he did at the beginning of this year. So I love the prospect of him, you know, fulfilling that potential that Jim Bowden talked about that we all hoped was going to happen last year. And then, you know, at playing Deadpool's advocate, you know, if I'm an owner, I could see myself, you know, going all in, pushing all my chips to the center of the table and saying, look, I'll trade him to you for a top 15 outfielder that I know has been more consistent, no injury concerns, you know, someone that I can just bank on the stats that Haniger has given me, but over a season-long progression.
Right. I wouldn't fault you for doing that. I wouldn't personally do it because I am such a fan, but that does seem like the smart play. If you can get a guy like me in your league who's a bit of a fanboy and say, you know, here's a decent price, I'd probably jump at that and give away a guy who's more of a stable profile. John Russell Fenton could not join us tonight, but I want to give him a shout out, and his bye high was Nick Pivetta. JR is obviously a Phillies fan, and Pivetta has been pretty good to date. You know, the strikeouts have been there. Really, really low ERA. Sub 3 ERA. Pivetta's got it figured out a little bit, and he was a guy who was always promising, but just couldn't stop giving up runs. So off to a good start. And I got him in a couple best balls as well. Way down the line at the end of the draft when you're just digging for a name, because in most of them you're drafting about 40 players. And I want to credit, I want to say Bradley Newman of the FWFB crew. I put out there, I said I'm towards the end of a draft here. I'm just looking for some pitchers. And he said, think about Pivetta. So I dug in a little more. Obviously, I'm a Phillies fan myself, so I knew who Pivetta was. But with the strikeout potential, I said, you know what, that's great. He's got a spot in the rotation that seems pretty secure. Give me those two things and see what can happen. So.
And Mike, I'll piggyback on that. Sorry to interrupt you, but you might not be too happy with me after I say this, but on the Dirt Dogs podcast that we had, I think last week, I did a bold prediction that Nick Pivetta will have a better season than Chris Archer. So that might not be good for your Invitational League, but it might be good for your Phillies, so you kind of have to give and take a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I would take that. Yeah.
Unless Archer gets traded to the Phillies.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, for Archer, I'm not holding my breath. I'm hoping that he strikes out the 200-plus that he should and go from there.
Yeah, but that's something that Pivetta has the skills to do as well. He's already shown it this year that he can strike out the people. So give me the guy in the NL East compared to the AL East, right, which is Chris Archer's division, and I think I can get, you know, basically the same strikeouts, and just being in those different divisions, that'll balance out the ERA towards ERA and WHIP towards Pivetta's side, as long as he has that gig and he keeps it.
Right, and Pivetta's already pitched against the Braves a couple times, one of them coming in SunTrust, and, you know, passed those tests. So, and we'll see what happens, but he was for sure an early waiver priority for a lot of people. All right, so scoring it at the end of the first round, I've got Randy ahead by one. Very, very close race here.
Let's go.
Of course. this game is rigged.
Plenty of time to make ground up. Coming into round two.
Before we go, I got a quick question. This just popped up because I was looking at some ADP. Uh-huh. Redraft, if you have Acuna and you're getting frustrated and the Mitch Haniger owner comes to you and offers Haniger for Acuna straight up, redraft, what are you saying?
You know, I'm probably going to say no to that based on, I think you're probably going to get about the same amount of games played with Haniger and the injury risk.
Yeah.
But it depends on where I'm at in the league. If I'm, you know, if I was in 11th place in TGFBI instead of 7th, I think, you know, the pressure to do that deal would be much greater, and I would probably pull that trigger.
Yeah, it's just because I was looking at anybody outfielder-wise that was ahead of Haniger in ADP that was slumping, and could you maybe go to the guy that was panicking and get that deal done? And the one that popped out, you know, right away was Acuna, and I thought that was kind of interesting since you said that you took Acuna in TGFBI, right, but are also a Haniger fan, so that'd be an interesting one. Hopefully nobody actually forces that offer upon you and makes you have to make a decision.
I own both. I own both, so I'm fine.
Oh, you have them both in TGFBI? Okay, yeah, never mind. Yeah. All right, you're good.
I'm all right there. But yeah, I'm dangerously thin at outfielder, so anyone who makes an offer, I've got to consider seriously. but all right, so round two. Since you're in the lead, Randy, you get to choose. Are you worried more about Jose Altuve or Joey Votto? Colin, whichever Randy chooses, you'll get the other one.
Disclaimer, I'm not really worried about either one of them, but if I'm going to have to pick one, I will pick out Altuve, and it has just basically everything to do with the fact that I love Joey Votto, and I think he still probably is the best, you know, just the best hitter in baseball, you know, from everything that's been happening so far. I've gotten to see a good bit of him, and it looks like he's just, you know, he's also one of the slow starts to a season. And I don't see where there's anything really wrong with him. We're recording this on Tuesday night. He hit a home run opposite field, you know, earlier tonight. So it looks like maybe he's starting to heat up a little bit. I think with Altuve, that's always kind of, you know, he's a great hitter as well. But what's kind of fueled his value fantasy wise, not completely fueled it, but kind of put him towards the top is that lineup with scoring a bunch of runs and stealing a bunch of bases. And not that the Astros lineup is bad, but they're also, you know, kind of, they've had a couple rough patches here and there. I mean, they almost got no hit by Bartolo Colon. Mm-hmm. So if by chance, if they're off, you know, if they have a little World Series hangover and the lineup just isn't firing quite as good as it was last year, maybe the runs are down a little bit. Maybe he's, you know, he's got the new contract. Maybe he runs a little bit less. But again, they're both still first round caliber players for me. But I guess I'd be a little more worried about Altuve if I had to pick one.
Yeah, I mean, The Astros have been interesting. You know, they've obviously had some good games, but there's been way more bad than people have expected from an offensive production standpoint. the Monday night they got blanked by the Angels. I think Tyler Skaggs was on the hill. So I had quite a few Astros stacks in DFS thinking, okay, you got a lefty here. There's plenty of guys in this lineup that'll do damage to a lefty like Skaggs, who has a horrible whip. And they ended up getting shut out. So I'm beefing a little bit with the Astros offense at the moment.
Yeah, it could just be something where this looks, you know, us even questioning their offense in 3 weeks looks dumb. Right. But they, you know, it's a little bit of a slow start. And then even tonight, you know, Otani's on the hill, so they've only got one run in the fourth inning. They're striking out a little bit, so maybe it's just a little bit of a World Series hangover there.
All right, Colin, tell me why I should cut Jose Altuve and offer whatever it takes to get Joey Votto.
Well, luckily I don't believe in Randy's, you know, thought process, because I own Jose Altuve in the Invitational, so I know he's going to be wrong. But it's completely like Randy to have faith in, like, Joey Votto and Jonathan Scope, who show no power. They're completely, you know, washed up players, and that's just his thing. So no, seriously though, for Joey Votto, I think I'm on Randy's boat with him just being a slow starter. I've looked at all of his metrics. The one thing that just pops out to me that just makes me laugh is his ISO right now. So he had his first extra base hit yesterday, I believe, and this hasn't even computed his home run tonight. So his isolated power right now is .013. So that's something that all three of us could probably triple if we had one at bat in the major leagues. So that's just a funny stat to me. But moving forward with Joey Votto, I do think he's a slow starter. All of his peripherals look the same. He still has, you know, a 60%. Line drive rate, so he might just be coming unlucky. I mean, 36%. I'm sorry, a 36% ground ball rate, which is a little bit less than, you know, his regular average. But his medium and hard contact rate, they're all right in line with his career averages. Hard is a little bit down, but I think throughout the season it's going to level out. I know Joey Votto owners to begin the season are a little frustrated. I don't think that he's someone that I would want to trade away, unless I'm getting, you know, a perennial first round talent, which I don't think most owners are going to do, unless they just think, you know, this is the time to buy low on Votto and I don't like my first round pick or something like that. But with Joey Votto, I mean, he's always going to perform. And whenever he doesn't, we're going to see it in his underlying stats. We're going to see a decreased walk percentage, an increased strikeout percentage, and all of these pull percentage, opposite percentage, you know, it's all going to be skewed. And right now, everything just lines up with his career averages.
Right. And this isn't the first time Votto's slumped like this. You know, last year, everything was hunky-dory, but the prior year... shaped out a lot like this. His first half was abysmal. You know, you were getting ready to dump him, and then he came back with one of the all-time great second halves. And you know, if you did sell low on him, you had egg on your face. So yeah, I wouldn't panic on Votto. In fact, if you were on a team that was strong enough to weather the storm, I'd be looking to buy him. All right. So with a strong round two, I'm going to give the win to Colin Weatherwax.
Yeah.
Finally gets a round table win. All right, so stick tight, Randy. We're going to give Colin a little floor space here to go ahead and tell us what breakout he does not buy. Who do you think is overrated, Colin?
So can I just throw the obvious one in Jed Lowry, or do we have to actually do a fantasy relevant player?
There's some Jed Lowry shade.
No, I'll go with someone that was overdrafted in every league that I was in, and that's got to be Javi Baez. So coming into the season, you know, he's a very polarizing player, and I said on multiple podcasts and multiple articles that If I played in the defensive run save league, then I would definitely take him at his current draft price, because he was going in the eighth, ninth round ahead of, you know, second basemen that have been even, you know, more proven. And just with the way that Chicago runs their organization, the way that Joe Maddon manages his team, I knew that they had to get Ian Happ playing time. They had to get Ben Zobrist, Addison Russell, you know, all of these players, they have to get their time in. And, you know, with Javi Baez, he was a defensive, you know, magician. I mean, he's earned that. I'll give him that. He's a defensive magician. But for fantasy purposes, he still has a high strikeout rate. I know he started off the season very hot with a .292 batting average, seven home runs, and, you know, he's kind of lit the world on fire, and he is a very flashy player, so he's easy to love, and I'll give him that. But just based on his career numbers, based on his minor league track record, his walk percentage is going to dip down from 7.5, which is at now, you know, back to its mean of 6 or 3, in between 6 and 3, and then his strikeout rate has always been a problem. He's been one of those strikeout, walk, or home run guys. And, you know, when the home runs come, it's great, but he's not someone with the playing time that I want on my roster. I would rather own a guy like Jonathan Scope, and that's saying something, because I don't own Jonathan Scope. So, you know, with Javi Baez, I think now's the time to sell. If you have someone in your league that loves him, that believes that this is his breakout, now's the time to get you know, like a Didi Gregorius, someone that's breaking out and it's believable, to fill in that middle infield second baseman position.
Right, yeah. Baez, to me, is the king of the hot streak, the two-week hot streak. You know, his power explodes, he burns brightly, and then he goes back into slumping and striking out. So, you know, if your team is built to weather that, you know, you can hold on to him, especially if you're in a format where he qualifies at shortstop. I know on Yahoo it does. I don't think too many of the stricter formats, though, that's going to be the case. So second base is really deep. You got found value like Jed Lowry that you just brought up. So finding a second baseman isn't too hard at the moment. So if you can sell high on Javi Baez, I'll stamp that approval.
That's what I was looking for, your stamped approval, Mike.
There you go. So that's the pod for the night, guys. Appreciate you being on. Hit us one more time with your Twitter handles. Go ahead, Colin.
I'll probably change it after this podcast to the winner, but as of now, it's at CWeatherWax13.
You can just change the first half. You don't have to change the at. And you can get me on Twitter at @Roto_Wan, W-A-N. Go ahead, Randy, hit us with your Twitter.
Colin's always so humble. I really admire it. I'm on Twitter at RTH222, and every week I do a pitching preview, two-star pitchers and streamers for the week for FWFB. So check that out. You can find me on Twitter at RTH222.
Yeah, all jokes aside, definitely follow that article with Randy and then also with Mike Rotocop. Those streamer articles, I know Mike's on an incredible streak right now of less than 20% owned guys that are just absolutely killing the weeks that he says to start them. So definitely check those out.
Right. We're getting to the point of the season where you can really start to get aggressive with streamers. You're starting to know what offenses are going to perform how. You know, sample size at the end of April is where you kind of need it to be to have any kind of predictive measure. So definitely check that out. If you guys aren't using a streamer, you're doing it wrong. You should be strongly considering the end of your bench using a streamer. But thanks for joining me tonight, guys, and good luck in your TGFBI seasons, and hopefully somebody brings it home for FWFB.
Yep, thanks, Mike.